We've been waiting for you. Come on in. It's Talk 10 Tuesday with Chuck Buck and Dr. Erica Reamer for April 18th, 2023. Substituting for Dr. Reamer is Dr. James Kennedy. Today we welcome Susie Vestovich, Chief Operations Officer for Teotech USA. She will explain how to prevent revenue loss in the coding process. We'll get the latest coding news from Lori Johnson. Tiffany Ferguson covers the social determinants of health. Tim Powell is at the Tuesday News Desk, and Dr. James Kennedy will provide the TalkBack segment. Now, here's the publisher of ICD-10 Monitor, the host of Talk 10 Tuesday, and a man who thinks the cliche, at the end of the day, refers to happy hour, Chuck Buck.
It does. Actually, it does. Hey, thanks, Clark Anthony. Hello, everybody. And welcome to the 550th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday. And good morning, Dr. James Kennedy.
Hello, Chuck. Good to see you today.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. And folks, by the way, Dr. Kennedy is a personal friend of mine, so it's okay to call him Jim. At least I feel comfortable calling you Jim. So one more time, good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Buck.
You know, as you heard Clark Anthony announce, today we have on our program Susie Vestovich. She's going to be talking about how to prevent revenue loss through the coding process. And Jim, you know, I don't have any codes, but I'm still concerned about revenue loss. How about you?
Well, today's tax day, so yeah. You better be concerned. So your brother, big brother, will come see you.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks for that comment, Jim. And later in this broadcast, we're going to hear your point of view. So what are you going to be talking about, Jim?
We're going to talk about the comprehensive CC-MCC analysis and my sadness that it was not proposed this year.
Whoa, excellent topic, Jim. We look forward to your point of view. We have much news to report, and so we begin this morning with Tim Powell. Tim is at the Talk 10 Tuesday News Desk.
Thanks, Chuck. Today, we're going to be talking about GME payments to rural emergency hospitals. And on April 10th of 2023, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services issued the fiscal year 2024 Medicare Hospital Inpatient Prospective Payment System, IPPS, and Long-Term Care Rule. The CMS and the proposed rules provided for the payment of interns and residences for rural emergency hospitals. If these changes are finalized, rural hospitals that become REHs would be allowed to serve as the training sites for Medicare GME payment purposes. The proposed changes to GME payments for training in the new Medicare provider type of REHs are aimed at addressing the growing concern over closures of rural hospitals. The Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 established the REH provider type to help support graduate medical education training in rural areas. This change would also help ensure that there's a sufficient number of medical professionals trained to provide care in rural areas where there may be a shortage of healthcare providers. And by supporting graduate medical training in rural areas, these changes could also help to improve the overall quality of care in these underserved communities. Currently, GME payments are driven by the following factors that do not apply to REHs: the ratio of Medicare days to total days, the ratio of patient residents to available beds, inpatient payments under IPPS, and in addition, there's also a concern that acute care hospitals have been capped at the number of residents to the amount of residents from a cost reporting period over 20 years ago. Acute care hospitals will be concerned that these payments will reduce the amounts that they get for GME, and with that, back to you, Chuck.
Thanks, Tim, very much. That was Tim Powell. Tim is a compliance expert, and he's the national correspondent for ICD-10 Monitor. Folks, it is Tuesday. It's April the 18th, and you're listening to the 550th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday. Stand by.
Social determinants of health, SDOH, are becoming more and more important every day. That's because CMS is expected to mandate SDOH assessments and reporting. Are you prepared? Has your organization determined how to integrate the collection of SDOH data and C-codes into staff workflows? During an exclusive ICD-10 Monitor webcast, two of the nation's prominent subject matter experts, Tiffany Ferguson and Marie Steinbuch, will walk you through essential concepts specific to the capture of SDOH data and C-codes, as well as CMS reporting guidelines and requirements. The webcast, Social Determinants of Health, How to Maximize Data and C-Code Capture, is now available on demand. Register now at the ICD University Bookstore to listen and learn.
Here now with the Talk 10 Tuesday Coding Report is Lori Johnson. And good morning, Lori Johnson.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning, Dr. Kennedy. And happy HIP Week to our listeners. The Public Health Emergency, or the PHE, ends on May 11th, 2023. please be aware that everything does not stop regarding PHE on May 11th. For example, new COVID treatment add-on payments, or NCTAP, will continue until September 30th, 2023, which is the end of the fiscal year in which the PHE ends. The Medicare enhanced payment will continue for the following medications: convalescent plasma, remdesivir, baricitinib, molnupiravir, Paxlovid, and Kineret. To continue to receive NCTAP, which is 20% add-on payment, assign V07.1, which is U07.1, plus PCS codes for remdesivir, convalescent plasma, or baricitinib, or submit the NDCs for Paxlovid and molnupiravir. See CMS COVID-19 toolkit for detailed procedure codes. As we prepare for the end of the PHE, it is important to have discussions with other functions of the revenue cycle, such as patient access, revenue integrity, charge master, CDI, billing, contracting, and of course, HIM. Determine what policies were changed during the PHE and if those changes will continue after the PHE. Patient access may see some changes with regards to upfront collections. Revenue integrity will continue to charge for COVID treatment, but there will be a change with regards to reimbursement of that treatment. ChargeMaster may be updating prices and ensure that the NDC codes are associated with these treatments. CDI team should continue to clarify COVID-19 status. Billing and contracting will need to be aware of the payment policies of non-Medicare payers and ensure to get accurate reimbursement. And for my HIM friends, you need to assign the COVID codes for the diagnosis and treatment. The additional 20% is paid based on the reported codes. Also, continue to obtain positive COVID test results to support the diagnosis when the patient is not tested at your facility until the end of the fiscal year. Lastly, update your facility-specific coding guidelines regarding the end of the PHE and the changes that you've made. The update will promote consistency among your coding staff. And with that, have a wonderful HIP week, and back to you, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Lori. That was Lori Johnson. Lori is the Senior Healthcare Consultant for Revenue Cycle Solutions. Chuck?
Thank you, Jim. And Lori Johnson, thank you very much for your coding report. Here now with the Talk to Tuesday report on the social determinants of health is Tiffany Ferguson. Good morning, Tiffany Ferguson.
Good morning, Chuck, and good morning, all. I am reporting from my hotel room at NAPAC 2023. So that is why Dr. Reamer is not on the broadcast and how we missed yesterday, Dr. Ron Hirsch. So welcome. Have a great week, all. I wanted to talk today and expand on the 2024 IPPS ruling regarding health equity and social determinants of health. So this week, I'm going to actually specifically talk out and call out the Z code regarding 59.00, unspecified homelessness, with the subcategories 5901 and 5902, sheltered and unsheltered homelessness, that are now considered proposed in the final ruling a complication or comorbidity, CC, based on the higher average of cost of care for those individuals and compared to cases without those codes in the data they looked at. So for listeners, the distinction between sheltered and unsheltered, which seems a little confusing of how that would be called out for significance, those subcategories were added in 2021. It was helped to specify homeless individuals, how they've come, how they access community resources versus those that do not. A sheltered homeless person may be admitted to the hospital, but have the ability to discharge to a shelter from the hospital or have access to a medical bed, which would allow them to stay there the entire day and not have to go out and come back. compared to an unsheltered individual who may be living out of their car or sleeping on the sidewalks. These individuals may not have access to showers or a secure location to place their belongings, medical care, medications, posing additional risks and complexities to their hospital care needs. The final rule acknowledges that the value of SDOH and has also recognized low utilization of Z codes. So currently sitting at 1.59% from last reports of all claims. To increase Z code utilization, CMS has stated that consistent with our annual updates to account for changes in resource consumption, treatment patterns, and the clinical characteristics of patients, CMS is recognizing homelessness as an indicator of increased resource utilization in the acute inpatient hospital setting. I commend the subcommittee that worked on this with CMS, particularly acknowledging the impact of homelessness on increased length of stay delays, delays related to denials from post-acute providers, poor access to outpatient care to manage their chronic conditions, and this population's because of their greater presence and exposure to communicable diseases and the significant presence of substance use and mental illness in this population. CMS fully recognizes that underreporting of SDOIC codes. However, they are hoping to expect with the new quality requirements for hospital inpatient quality reporting program, IQR, called Social Drivers of Health, that they're going to have higher reporting of Z codes in the coming years. CMS has stated that Z code reporting will continue to be considered for future analysis and CC capture, similar to homelessness. So I ask listeners, when applicable, to ensure they are creating mechanisms in their healthcare organization for Z code capture. For further details, we talked about the webcast. Make sure to check that out on demand. And feel free to reach out if you guys have any further questions through MedLearn or through me directly and in the chat. And with that, back to you, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you. That was Tiffany Ferguson. Tiffany is CEO of Phoenix Medical Management. Chuck?
Thanks, Jim. And thank you again, Tiffany Ferguson, for your excellent report.
They work quietly behind the scenes, often overlooked in the daily fog of health information management. Yet these men and women are the living, breathing, connective tissue between patients and providers and ultimately the C-suite. These are the unsung heroes of healthcare, health information professionals. Fortunately, recognition that is long overdue is coming. MedLearn Publishing and our portfolio of companies, including MedLearn Media, Rack Monitor, and ICD-10 Monitor, are devoting an entire week to spotlight their work. And this week only, you can benefit from a variety of special offers. Today, if you're among the first 50 to register, you'll receive a complimentary pass to the on-demand webcast series, the 2023 IPS Summit Final Rule Update with Expert Insight and Analysis. Use HIP23 at checkout to redeem this offer. Join us this week, HIP Week, where it's hip to be hip.
Coming up next, our lead story.
Today's lead story is sponsored by Hitex, whose CDI natural language processing engine addresses revenue and quality measures. It's embedded in Epic's CDI Note Reader's workflow. Find them at hitex.com.
Here now is Susie Vestovich.
Thanks, Chuck. The coding system is complex, so errors are common and often lead to significant financial losses. A major challenge, tracking down clinical notes and ensuring compliance. Human errors such as incorrect coding, data entry mistakes, and lack of documentation are the biggest culprits. The American Medical Association estimates that coding errors cost the industry approximately $36 billion annually in lost revenue, denied claims, and potential fines. When patient encounters are not fully captured in proper clinical notes for proper coding and billing, this leads to significant revenue losses for all providers, hospitals, clinics, and individual practitioners. And one of the biggest sources of lost revenue is the use of paper-based notes to document patient encounters. Adding salt to this wound, fines are imposed by both the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services and the OIG for improper billing, coding, and documentation. In 2019 alone, CMS imposed $2.5 billion and OIG $3.7 billion in fines. A study by the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association found that clinics can experience a 10 to 30% decrease in revenue due to a coding error alone. Did you catch those percentages? A 10 to 30% decrease in revenue for coding errors. This loss for a clinic can add up to $125,000 per year. Sole practitioners are more vulnerable to coding errors because they have fewer resources and less support than larger practices. A report by the American Academy of Family Physicians found coding errors can cost a sole practitioner up to $50,000 in lost revenue annually. So what's the solution? Here are five methods to consider that can help prevent coding errors and avoid revenue losses. One, invest in training and education programs to ensure coding and billing staff are up to date on coding regulations and guidelines. Two, invest in automated coding tools and software. These cutting-edge tools are specifically designed to minimize human errors and ensure encounters are captured and optimally coded to avoid lost revenue. Some of these platforms go as far as to offer end-to-end full-service coding by incorporating both AI-based coding with coding team oversight. For coders working with hospitals, especially smaller hospitals, there are affordable platforms that will capture DRG coding, optimizing complex hospital claim submissions. Three, conduct regular audits and reviews of coding practices. This helps identify errors and areas for improvement. Four, outsourcing coding to experienced reputable third-party coding companies. And lastly, point five, collaborate with your coders. This will help ensure proper documentation and coding practices are maintained.
As many of you know, when we have a guest co-host, as we do today with Dr. Jim Kennedy, we ask them to share a point of view, a POV. So here now with his POV is my very good friend, Dr. Jim Kennedy. Jim, it's all yours.
Thank you so much. And it's happy Hip Week to everybody. I just need to express thoughts and feelings regarding the IPPS rule. I totally agree that we need to report social determinants of health. However, as you know, the 5010 billing system has a limit of the number of codes that can be submitted on an inpatient and outpatient basis. On the inpatient basis, we can only report 25 diagnosis codes. And on the outpatient basis, in my mind, we can only report 12. How can we capture all of these Z codes if we have other codes that are affecting reimbursement models like the MS-DRG or the APR-DRGs, or the readmission models, or for those on the 3M potentially preventable complications or Maryland HACTS, we need to have all of these codes in order to address the PPCs that are associated with that. We need more slots on the inpatient and outpatient basis so that when the documentation in the record reflect the social determinants of health, there's places to put it in so that it can be submitted electronically to CMS. In addition, software needs to prioritize the Z codes into these slots in light of the other risk adjustment models that we have to deal with. So I'm just saying that in your comments to CMS, please address the number of slots. Number two, I'm extremely disappointed that CMS did not implement the comprehensive CC-MCC review this year. As you know, about 4 years ago, CMS proposed a complete revision of the CCs and MCCs. of which personally I submitted about 30 letters addressing this. Well, it's been 4 years now. When are we going to be able to have the benefit of this CC-MCC analysis? Because as you know, there are patients who are bedbound that we don't get a CC or MCC with, or like cardiac tamponade is only a CC. And Medicare has even published its C1, C2, C3 analysis, which show that certain diagnoses need to be elevated, other diagnoses need to be brought down. When are they going to do it? I understand that they need to study, and during COVID, there was reasons to delay the study. COVID is over. When are we going to do this? So I would say that that is my thoughts and feelings for this. I hope that in your comments to CMS that you would push for the equity that's essential to CDI, equity in the social determinants of health, equity of the impact of diagnoses. If you would like to learn more of the C1, C2, C3 methodology, I will put the link in the comments. Take a look at that and submit that in your comments. Thank you so much for the privilege. Back to you, Chuck.
Thanks, Jim, very much. That was an excellent topic for your point of view. And Jim, a real quick question. Sorry to catch you off guard like this, but you mentioned a couple of very important issues. How do these folks actually activate or make these things become real?
Well, as far as the social determinants of health, one thing we need to remember is that we can take the documentation from social work notes. So one of the things that does not require a physician to actually document these. So the build out of the social work notes that incorporates the SDOH Z codes can be such, and then coding needs to be able to look at those SDOH, those social work notes. And that's something that we can, again, we're trying to unload the burden on the provider, you know, for these documentations. Number two, I'm going to say as far as the CC-MCC, I encourage you to read the proposed rules. It has the 9 to 10 guiding concepts. And if you feel strongly that a certain diagnosis should be a CC or MCC, please, please put that in your comments to CMS. Otherwise, I don't have any solution. You know, we really need, Chuck, we need more slots. We need to be able to capture these diagnoses. Otherwise, coders have a conundrum. What do they prioritize? What goes in the top 25? And that's a predicament for all of us that are sensitive to leapfrog, that are sensitive to quality measures, you know, all of these things. There are codes that don't impact reimbursement, but affect the various measures. Which ones matters is something that CMS needs to know about.
Thanks, Jim. I want to circle back and ask you again, how do folks make sure that CMS is listening and there are more slots, as you have indicated?
I don't know. I mean, CMS, you can always send power. They're under the government. I would say that the Secretary of Health and Human Services would be there. I would say that since Kamala Harris is from California, Secretary Bereke is from California,
that's right.
Really, this is going to have to come from the Democrats who are in charge right now. Congress could certainly do something, but Congress is, you know, they're at war with the president right now. So therefore, this is going to have to be a directive. I think that as part of the equity agenda that is being pushed by CMS, I'm just sad that they chose to make it harder for us than it needed to be.
Indeed, Jim. I want to bring back Lori Johnson. Lori, I had a question for you, and that is the public health emergency, the PHE, as we know, ends May the 11th. But this week, I think the Republicans gave President Biden an agreement to end the public health emergency. What is that all about?
I think it's just the formalization of and signing off on that. Because I know the Senate passed it and, you know, having to dot all the I's and cross the T's. And Chuck, there was also a question about if the end of the PHE will affect the sequencing of U0 7.1, which is the code for COVID. And right. I don't believe that it will, because there's a lot of information in the official coding and reporting guidelines with regards to the sequencing of COVID.
Very good, Laurie Johnson. Thanks very much. And Jim, thank you for your point of view. That was excellent. That's going to be a wrap for this is our 550th live edition of Talk 10-2C. And I want to thank our panelists today. Tiffany Ferguson, who reported on the social determinants of health. Laurie Johnson, whom you just heard. Tim Powell. Susie Vestovich, who reported our lead story. Thank you, Susie, very much. And a very special thanks to my dear friend, Dr. Jim Kennedy. He's going to be with us next Tuesday, and I hope you will be as well. And remember, when you can't listen live to all the Talk 10-2C broadcasts, you can listen to them on Apple and Spotify and Stitcher. And when you do, rate us, give us a review. Until next Tuesday, I'm Chuck Buck reporting for ICD-10 Monitor and Talk 10-2C. Thank you very much. Have a great week, everybody.
Talk 10-2C is a production of ICD-10 Monitor.